Okay, we're back here with part two of our discussion with John Kaiser, recorded on April 24th, 2017. So, one more you want to talk about, John, today. SK Mining Corp, traded in Toronto under the symbol ESK, ESKYF in the United States, over the counter ESKYF. 105.3 million shares outstanding now, the latest count that I've seen anyway. 36 cents in Canadian money, giving it a market cap of around $38 million. I don't know this story hardly at all, except the SK Creek, of course, was a major deposit that goes back some time. I think some 130, I don't know. It's been a pretty successful, high margin operation, I believe, in the past, right? But talk to us about SK Creek Mines. What do you like about that? And tell us that story.
SK Mining Corp is a company that's been in this area of the SK Creek deposit since the late 80s. In 2009, Mac Balcom took it over on behalf of a bunch of disgruntled shareholders who were unhappy with the way the past management had run the company. And of course, he did it just in time for like the bear market beginning. So he has struggled to keep this company alive. And this year, he finally attracted Silver Standard as a potential farm-in partner. There is a deal which is waiting final signing, whereby Silver Standard can earn up to 60% by spending about $12 million over the next 3 years, and then go, to get 51%, then go to 60%. And by delivering a PEA. Now, the SK Creek, the discovery, the original in 1989, was an absolutely phenomenal discovery. Murray Pezum's Calpine did it, and a partner that they optioned it from Stikine. It actually went to $60 per share. Of course, in those days, we didn't have 100 million shares out. We had like 6, 7 million shares out, so we could get these kind of phenomenal price gains. But that came in the midst of a bear market. It breathed life into the sector, and it kept us busy until the diamond discoveries in 1992, and then the Voisey's Bay and all that shifted our attention elsewhere. But this deposit, which eventually Barrick ended up owning from 1995 to 2008, delivered 2.5 million tons, grading 43 grams per ton gold and 2,200 grams per ton silver. That's like 1.5 ounces gold and 70 ounce per ton silver. 3.5 million ounces, 180 million ounces of silver from a very small deposit. It was fabulous. And of course, that's depleted. Barrick and Holmes and the predecessor Homestake, they explored the 4 kilometer stretch, did a lot of deep drilling. But what's happened now is that what looked like SK Creek 2 back in 1990-91, the Lulu Zone, which was owned by a couple of juniors called Silver Butte and American Fiber, now Carl Edmonds, who did all the work during the late 90s trying to find another SK Creek, he's the driving force behind the rethinking of the Lulu Zone. Now, the Lulu Zone had delivered 14 meters of half ounce gold and 1 ounce silver in the same sort of carbonaceous mudstones as the SK Creek deposit. And at the time, we thought we had SK Creek too, and it was a huge area play around. And this is only like 6, 7 kilometers from the SK Creek deposit with the same sort of rocks there. But then they drilled all around it, and it was just nothing there. It was like one of the biggest disappointments in that stage of my career in terms of what looked like a fantastic discovery, and then there was nothing around it. And various groups have looked at it during the past 15 years trying to figure it out. They were always trying to sort of drill through the surface, trying to find the roots of this thing. But during all this work, they realized that there is a thrust fault in this area, which is a low-angle fault, which has pushed the sheet of rocks exposed at surface westwards, probably 1,000 meters or something like that. And they realized, oh, the Lulu Zone is potentially the tip that has been detached from an iceberg that's underneath in the footwall of the thrust fault. But because the stratigraphy is on its side, And the deposit will be this like narrow, you know, whatever, 10 meter wide thing of tilt on its side. Trying to spear that through 500, 600 meters of you know, garbage rock pushed from the west.
Right.
That's hopeless. So the exciting thing that Carl Edmonds is going to pursue for Silver Standard is a brute force drilling program whereby they're going to drill a fence of holes from the west, which start in the footwall and literally snake underneath the thrust fault in the hope of mapping out the sort of somewhat vertical stratigraphy. This way you cut through it perpendicular, you can start seeing where the rocks are, where they are. And of course, if they start getting the alteration and the smoke, that's indicative, they can start piecing the puzzle together. It's a vectoring exercise. We're dealing with a blind deposit, and the Lulu stuff says that this is attached to something very substantial. So at the end of the day, SK Mining will own about 20% of the project. And, you know, I've done an outcome visualization of what another SK Creek would be worth. At today's metal prices, it would be worth $3.2 billion Canadian, which means that the stock could go to a price of, what do we got here?
Well, you've got...
It could go to over $5 if it has 20% of another SK Creek. But what's really exciting is that Silver Standard's only optioning a portion of this whole property package the company has. To the south, it has the Cory claims, which are 100%, and where probably $20 million was wasted in a quite haphazard program in the past couple of decades when these lifestyle guys were running this thing, kind of like thrashing around trying to find another SK Creek. It's got sort of right the geochemical signature. If SK Creek 2 is found, the glass goes half full for this whole area. And that's, of course, right west of the Brucejack, Pretium's Brucejack area. This is a very, very rich part of the Golden Triangle. On the 100% owned stuff, you would see a 5x potential. You find SK Creek 3, then this stock could go to a, you know, it could be a $20 stock with its $120 million fully diluted. So the trick for the company will be to leverage that 20% net interest into getting its stock, say, above 50 cents, attracting these, one of the companies or a group out there that says, we'll give you $5, $10 million to start looking in that southern part. And do it properly with you know, building all the bits and pieces of information accumulated in the past 2 decades and find us SK Creek 3. So it's kind of like a double whammy. If a Silver Standard finds it, it will step up and start drilling this thing. They'll probably try to absorb SK Mining. But the company, to protect itself and make sure it gets a good price, is going to need to tackle the southern part where it has 100%. So this one I made a bottom facial probably a month ago, even though the Silver Standard deal is not yet signed. I think there's another partner, Kirkland Lake, is a 20% partner too, so it's been complicated getting all the legal stuff sorted out. But I think they're very close, and then probably start drilling late May, early June. And that's the kind of thing where it's like a blast from the past, something that was kind of spoiled 20, 25 years ago, coming back to life in a part of British Columbia that is receiving an awful lot of attention from the juniors.
Yeah, and rightfully so. A lot of excitement up there now. And just one more here, potentially, John. Well, you mentioned terminology, the lifestyle types of investors. And I know, talk to us about what you mean by lifestyle type investors, and also then I'd like to ask you about a new innovation that you've come up with that is very, very fascinating in terms of sort of, I'd say, shining the light on less scrupulous people that are involved in this sector. So,
I started in this industry in the early 80s. In the 80s and 90s, the junior game was all about discovery, exploration. You know, you did your grassroots work, generated the targets, you drilled it, and when you got a discovery hole, then you got a lot of action. You would get what I call S-curve action, where the stock would shoot to crazy levels very early in the game, levels that were ultimately the value when the deposit was put into production. And I love this, the excitement that comes with a new discovery when you haven't found the limits of the deposit and nor have you found the best grade yet. But from 2003 onwards, we have kind of lost this whole discovery exploration. That's when the China super cycle kicked in. We saw copper go from 60 cents a pound up to $3-4 a pound. Mm-hmm. Gold changed too. It came out of its 260 bottom and traded as high as $1,900. During this period, it was all about feasibility demonstration, dragging deposits out of the closet that had been found decades ago and found wanting in terms of grade or other, criteria for justifying development. All of a sudden, they were dragged into the money. Mm-hmm. And a lot of institutional capital flowed into the sector. We saw several hundred takeover bids by bigger companies absorbing these things. An awful lot of money was made. The Canadians refined their 43-101 system to include reporting of economic studies. And during this inflow of money, the lifestyle crowd, the guys who weren't really capable of, doing feasibility demonstration work, which is very technical, they went in there and continued to find the little mineralized outcrops and targeting people and saying, we're going to find something fantastic and so on. And they were using targets that had no geological potential to mm-hmm. deliver anything. And they didn't know that. They would also farm into all these projects that these prospect generators would come up with, these mediocre things that the prospect generators of good technical teams don't feel are worth their own time and effort to drill. So they farm it out to these bogus lifestyle guys. These guys do a song and dance, pull in money. It has really harmed the credibility of the junior space as an arena where good exploration is done by competent geologists with well-fleshed-out geological visions. And I think they ended up being crushed in the bear market that began in 2011, which kind of wiped out the optionality trade. But it really drove a stake into the heart of the lifestyle groups. And this is why I like companies like Camino Minerals or Adamara, where you have technically competent people who know how to develop a geological vision, present a story that makes sense, and also execute a program that can actually deliver make or break results. And they have the ability to have plan B and plan C and maybe even plan D in on the back burners, just in case the usual thing that Mother Nature does, in other words, deliver disappointment, happens with the current plan A. These are the types of groups that are now in ascendancy. In March, TSX Venture listed resource companies raised $700 million. Mm. That is the highest amount raised since June of 2011. And the kinds of companies that raised it, it's not for drilling infill holes to deliver a feasibility study. Mm-hmm. I mean, those are all TSX listed companies that are doing that. No, these are juniors that are doing discovery exploration. We are back into an 80s, 90s style discovery exploration system type of bull cycle. I think we're in the second year. I think we have, 4 to 5 years for this cycle. It's immune to the price of gold. Bay Street, the market's become tired of the tyranny of waiting for what gold is going to do to determine what the trend in the market is. If gold goes higher, and I believe it should, wonderful. But the market's shifting to the talents of the geological teams and the exploration plays, and they say, give us a discovery that works with the prices that we have and maybe so good that even if they go a little lower in the interim, they still work so that we don't have to worry about all this fluctuations in the prices of the metals.
Right. Okay, so now you've come up with a tool that is, I think, very exciting and will help investors understand and really sort of smoke out the lifestyle hucksters, let's say, and allow people to focus on these real exploration targets, the targets that have the chance to come up with something big. Talk to us a little bit about your share collector tool that you're putting together, and it's actually going live now, I understand, or will go live, you expect, pretty soon.
I'm a founder of an online portal called the Share Collective, which is being built in conjunction with an Australian IT group. And originally, the original seed funding came from Andy Greger, the former head of Bechtel's global mining unit. And what we are doing is creating a way for people to imagine a deposit, hook up a mine to it, input all the, you know, how many tons, what grade of what metals, what sort of underground mine or whatever, hook up cost to it, and then push the magic button that delivers the net present value and internal rate of return based on a simplified life of mine type of financial model for the mine. And this is, of course, what the mining industry does when it assesses a prospect. It's what competent geologists from juniors are supposed to do early on so that they know, okay, is our target large enough? What sort of grade do we need? And it's what analysts and newsletter writers are also supposed to do. The companies are not allowed to do this. They can only publish dots. They can't do a forward-looking connection right. of the dots.
Right.
But once they, when they have their 43-101 report, yes. But that takes, you know, millions of dollars and you know, many months, or sometimes years to get together. The public has become alienated in terms of understanding these early stage projects. And mm-hmm. there's a few people like me who do it, but it's a lot of work. And you know, I can only do it for, you know, a dozen companies or so. The brokerage industry is dying in terms of analysis of early stage stuff. Yeah, there's still plenty of coverage for the advanced feasibility demonstration, optionality plays. But for early stage discovery plays, you want to know, what is this thing worth if it becomes reality? So the Share Collective basically clones me endlessly mm-hmm. into the anonymous crowd. The members sign up. They're not allowed to disclose their true identity. The disclaimer on the system says everybody here is assumed to have a conflict of interest with the goal of influencing the behavior of the market and everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
But they are untrusted. They have no credentials. So in this shark tank, it's omniscient. Everything you do in there is tracked as part of the permanent record. So the only way, if you want to be able to influence anybody, is to actually do good. So we're creating a setting that enables the crowd to look at, say, the SK Mining project and come up with their own vision of what this would look like, what it would be worth, and then share it in that public space so that everybody else can see. And unlike, you know, your stock forums where it's just basically linear text, people bashing each other,
yeah.
You know, probably drunk at the time or something like that. But here you actually share numbers, like mm-hmm. grade, like metallurgical recoveries, payables, costs, mm-hmm. and so on.
Mm-hmm.
So this enables this huge universe of engineers, geologists, sophisticated investors to go in there and critique it and do it anonymously.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what we will see is you get a whole bunch of people coming up with versions. You'll see a consensus emerge as to what the numbers seem to be connecting to or adding up to. And this will enable players in the market to see, okay, let's say a $3 billion prize for this SK Mining. We're still at target testing stage, so that means the uncertainty is still high. So fair value is like maybe 5% of that. So this thing should be priced at, say, maybe $150 million valuation now. And then they can argue, they can fluctuate the market, they can argue about where it should be. But this problem we've had of short sellers coming in there, selling on a downtick and crushing the bid and all that and despairing all the retail investors out there,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Now we will actually see a range of fair speculative value. And when these short traders pile into the market and try to knock it down, the value hunters will come in
mm-hmm.
and buy this thing. And even other algorithmic traders, they'll know what the limit is. So you'll see volatility within a range that is ultimately responsive to results. So when suddenly the grades are better, the step out extends the zone, you will see the market, everybody will go in there and tweak their numbers, you'll see the change. But even if, say, gold pops up $100, the system recalculates all the numbers, all the outcomes in terms of the new gold price. So you could see how all of a sudden everything is good value. It's a way of quantifying the potential of all these discovery plays, putting it into the crowd's hands in a very dynamic system. And the lifestyle guys, you know, we will have, you know, 1,500 to 2,000 Australian and Canadian listed companies there with several thousand projects. The projects that belong to the lifestyle, you know, the website will have nothing on it. There'll be no coherent program. We're not going to out the hucksters. The crowd will simply ignore them. There'll be the very fact that they're there with nobody looking at the boomtown, sharing anything to the boomtown of their project, will pretty much show everybody that these guys are not real. This will really force everybody to up their game, to put forth competent programs, competent stories, and the graphics and information needed to support that.
Well, it looks like a really fascinating approach, John. I think one in which you're shining the light on truth, and that's what we need. I mean, that would make for a much more efficient market, I think, probably enhance the liquidity as well, if it's a fair and honest market, because you shine the light on the hucksters, on the lifestyle types, as you call them. I can't wait to start following this, John, and hopefully, I think you're doing some testing of it now, are you?
Yeah, we just launched beta testing. We're going to add them in waves. Anybody interested in becoming a beta tester should get in touch with me, jkaiser@kaiserresearch.com. Hopefully, you know, in about three or four months, we'll have all the bugs worked out and be able to go live on an open basis. So, and you know, you mentioned efficiency. What this will do is it will force capital to be much more efficiently allocated.
Exactly.
Instead of it going to these guys with their meaningless deposit projects where you can drill forever and ever and never find anything, that will be shunned. You won't have the space diluted. You won't have all these people talking about the 1,000-to-1 odds of finding anything. Those 1,000-to-1 odds are real because there's like 500-600 bogus companies with zero chance, diluting the actual success potential of the Camino-type groups and the Adamara-type groups.
Exactly. Well, I applaud you for the for your efforts here, John, and I think you're doing a very good thing for the industry, if it works as I understand it should. So thank you very much. We are out of time this week, John, but thank you so much for being with us. And I want to remind my listeners again at the Metals Investor Forum, don't waste any time. Go right now to J. Taylor Media. Sign up, click on the banner, name, email address, and you'll be sure to get into this free event. It is, John referred to it, it is one of the best, I think, that I've been a part of. And I really look forward to meeting up with you, John, and all the other people that are going to be at the show. Thanks so much again for being with us today.
Thanks, Jay, for having me on your program.
Folks, next week I'm going to be talking to Chen Lin on Top Stock Picks, so you won't miss what Chen has to say. In the resource sector, Chen also has some biotech ideas as well he'll probably want to share with us. So until then, bye for now, and please tune in next week, and blessings and peace and happiness to you all, and successful investing.